time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for September 15th, 2018. With 1 week to go before the 2018 New England Builders Ball, I thought it would be interesting to introduce you to a couple of the exhibitors who might not be so well known to everyone. It is interesting how people come to the bicycle business and what compels them to do so. My first guest is a commercial airline pilot. He's also a dad with two young children, and he's a new frame builder. He's not fresh out of school, obviously, but his frames are starting to get some traction in his home in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, as well as reaching farther west into the country. Matthew Manuel is the proprietor of Fluent Frames, and a great story as to how he came up with the name, and we'll talk with him in a moment. Then, just to break it up, we're going to head to Provence, France, where I caught up with Dylan Reynolds, the founder of Ride and Seek Bicycle Tours. As I mentioned last week on our show, we'll be talking about a new epic tour he's offering from Berlin to Budapest called the Iron Curtain Tour. I asked Dylan what makes an epic tour, who rides with him and his many tour guides, and what we might expect different from Ride and Seek Adventures. And then it's off to Vermont to speak with David Kane. David is a woodworker by trade, and he fell in love with the handlebar bags, panniers, and other bike bags when he saw a Rivendell bag he just could not get out of his mind and he could no longer purchase on his own. Now he spends as much time as he can making custom randonneuring and touring bags, along with some pretty clever accessories. So it's a big show tonight, so off to Halifax, Nova Scotia we go to speak with Matt Manuel. Hi, Matt. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I want to know about you and your company, Fluent Frameworks. Nice name, by the way. I like it.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. You're in Nova Scotia. You are the first person, first frame builder that I've actually spoken with in Canada, I think. Yeah, I think that is true. I was browsing your gallery and I saw a picture that included race numbers. So are you a bike racer? Are you still a bike racer? Were you a bike racer?
No, I'm probably going to lose all my street cred. But I think the photo you saw was probably in a bike shop that I frequent. And those guys, there's a ton of racers in there. So I'm not really active in the racing scene. And honestly, there's no time for it with the company and a full-time job and two kids at home. So
Fluent Cycle Works isn't all you do?
No, I am a pilot in another life.
A pilot?
Yeah, it's all true. I have to fit this in between going to work and flying around the countryside.
Do you fly commercial or do you fly, charter?
It's all commercial. I'm part of an airline.
How cool is that?
I guess so, yeah. It doesn't seem all that cool to me, honestly, but, it's all perspective, right?
Okay, I guess it is perspective, sure. So then I'd like to know how you went from whatever your education was to then being a pilot to being a frame builder. So how does that all come together?
Maybe it's a bit cliche, but I guess it's really just a story of passions and following those. I started flying a long time ago. Ended up in the military. I was flying CP-140 or I guess the American version would be a P-3. Starting to get phased out. I was flying that for probably 10 years and I just kind of hit probably, I don't like to say like a midlife crisis because I'm not quite there yet, but I would say like a third of my life crisis where pretty well settled in that job and there's not much more to pursue beyond a paycheck. And so I figured it was time to sort of write another chapter and pursue frame building and sort of at least take the steps to see if I could do it, see where it would take me and if I had the chops for it. here I am.
Yeah, that's right. Here you are, and here we are. You're going to be at the Builders Ball this year, which is next weekend.
Yeah.
So we know that we are.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Have you been before? You haven't.
Well, Eric invited me down last year, but truth be told, I didn't know anything about the Builders Ball, and I really wasn't in a place to bring any bikes. I wasn't even considering ever going to a show, really. But being a part of an airline, I had the opportunity. I flew down to Boston pretty quick from Halifax, and I checked out the show, and it was just like, it is the coolest show. It's just the coolest show. And I'm walking around as a frame builder, but really, in a sense, a bit of a poser, because I'm walking around and I'm talking to the other builders and see, I build frames too. So, I mean, I knew immediately I would spend the next year just trying to get myself geared up to bring some bikes to the show, and here I am.
Did we meet? Did you come by and say hello, or did we just like ships in the night?
We probably shipped through the night. I don't remember meeting you at the time.
Okay, not a problem. I was over in the corner looking out the window a lot. We make a helmet mirror, so I had my helmet mirror there.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe we did meet. I don't know. I can recall now. Yeah, I mean, but that show is just—it's like the coolest show, right?
It is
a cool
show. It is. I've been to a lot of shows, but that one's in the coolest venue I've ever been to. It's really nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so welcoming. It's great. Yeah, I love it. So definitely can't wait to be a part of it.
And so you shall. I guess I'd like to know about your process, because it's interesting. When you get on your website, you actually sort of break it out. That first decide what size wheels you want, which is a big thing these days. It used to be everybody was going to have, you know, either 700 by 23 or 26 by something. And now you have so many choices. So explain your process and how you get people to sort of winnow down what they want so that you know what you're going to build.
It's kind of hard, honestly, because you get two type of customers. You get some people that are just into the idea of having a custom frame. They kind of want a little bit of everything, and you have to really at least focus it a little bit, because if I'm going to put Fluent on a bike, it's going to do a little bit of everything, then it's not going to do any one thing really well. There are customers like that who need a little more guidance. So it basically comes down to a big conversation, right? A lot of back and forth. And I guess, like on the website, it's really just kind of a bit of guidance. Like locally, there's not a lot of hand-built custom frames around. So I feel like maybe I'm just trying to introduce the idea of a custom frame to people around here, like locally within Halifax or anywhere in Nova Scotia, really.
Are you building mainly for people in Canada, in Nova Scotia, or are you beginning, is the Builders Ball going to be your big foray into the States?
Yeah, it'll be a foray into the States, but I don't feel like I'm going to sell frames or anything. I'm honestly just, I just want to go to validate what I do in the garage every day, you know?
Sure, that's great.
Yeah, I just need to like finally put my bikes out there and show them off.
So let me remind our listeners real quick, we're speaking with Matthew Manuel, Matt, and he is with Fluent Frame Builders out of Nova Scotia, Canada. He's going to be at Builders Ball this year. We will mention somewhere else in the show a couple of times that Builders Ball is coming up this coming weekend, September 22nd at the Innovation and Design Center in Boston. Let's talk a little bit about your process. So tell us about your materials and how you're fabricating your frames. And then I also would like to know a little bit about your forks.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not building forks. I kind of just have enough tooling just to focus on the frames.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I'm at right now. Maybe in the future I can approach forks, but there's so many good forks out there, honestly, that I feel like I really need to pursue the forks. But as for the frames, anyways, it's all steel. It's all fillet brazing, for better or worse. I mean, it's a ton of work, but they look pretty beautiful when they come out. So that's about it, really. And I mean, the steel, it could be anything from Columbus or whatever I get my hands on, honestly.
Everybody knows I like steel frames, so you won't get any argument from me about that. You do offer a variety of frame sets. So you have road and you have mountain and you have gravel, which to me is sort of like road, you know, on steroids. And you have, the only one I didn't see is track. I don't see you doing any track.
No, there's no track around here.
Well, so that's a good reason.
Yeah, I think it's probably like the first place most builders go, it's like, got to build a track bike. But for me, like, what am I going to do? And I'm going to ride around town and I could be a hipster, go to the coffee shop. But it's just not a whole practical pursuit for track around here anyways.
Well, if there's a nice coffee shop, you know, at least you get to do that.
Right? Yeah, oh yeah. No, that's about the riding I do. I just ride to coffee shops or go for a beer, but there's no like specific frame design. Everything is just built around whoever wants a frame, right?
Who wants your frames? Who is contacting you, and how are they finding out about you?
I think the word is getting around Halifax pretty well. So I've got a few guys in Halifax right now. You know, it's spreading out across Canada a little bit. There's a guy in Toronto. Got another guy. I just sent a frame off to BC, so off to the West Coast. Hard to say how they're hearing about me, though.
Yeah, you need to track that. You know, like, how would you find out about me? Of course, I ask that all the time, and 99 out of 100 people won't tell you anyway. It's just like, just send me this, right? That's just the
secret,
way it is.
Yeah.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Are you painting your own frames? Your paints are beautiful. There's some really cool colors.
Yeah, thanks. I do paint my own frames. It's not something I wanted to do when I started out this whole journey, but I feel like I'm a man on an island here. There's really not much around me. There's not a culture of frame builders around me like there would be in Boston or New York. So I sent a frame down to, there's a custom motorcycle shop down the road from me, and I dropped a frame off, one of my first or second frames. I dropped it off to those guys. A few days later, they handed it back to me. It was all sanded down. They said they couldn't do it. Or at least not for the price that I was trying to get them to do it for. And it kind of just forced my hand to start painting on my own.
Yeah, it's interesting that motorcycle shops or auto paint shops have no idea what to do with the bicycle because it's so different. You have to like place it in a way that you can get to all of those little nooks and crannies, and it's just difficult. How'd you come up with the name Fluent?
Fluent just kind of made sense because I think for most of us bike geeks, we're generally pretty fluent in that language, right?
Yeah.
Like we could sit down and have a conversation about bicycles like all day long. So that's kind of just where it came from. It just made sense. But
it does make sense. When you describe it that way, it does make sense. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So somebody calls you up and says, okay, Matt, I want a frame. How do you start your process and how do you do your geometry and your design and your fitting?
It all starts really, like I use BikeCAD.
Okay.
Like Brent Curry's program.
Yep.
So that is a good place to start. I can fire off the measurements I need. I'll get those back, talk about how they ride, what exactly they want out of the ride, whether they're going to race or if they're just riding to a cafe or a brewery or something. It's just kind of an evolving conversation. At least the BikeCAD gives me a good place to start, and then it'll evolve from there.
How many frames are you hoping to build a year, and how long is your queue right now? Do you have a queue?
I do have a queue. It's a little bit artificial in a sense because I'm pretty busy with the bikes for the show right now.
Yeah, sure.
I have probably two or three bikes over the winter, and then I'm going to stop building for the summer so that I can just enjoy the summer, you know, hit the beach with the kids type of thing.
How old are your kids?
I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-month-old.
Life has changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty busy. And I don't want to be the dad that's in the garage all the time. I'd rather be a bad frame builder than a bad dad, you know.
It doesn't look like you're going to fail at either one. So it looks like you've got a good start to being a good frame builder. So are you looking forward to actually talking to these customers face-to-face? You're going to see a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't spent much time thinking about it. I'm just so busy trying to get these bikes ready. Like, I've been painting all day. This is the first break I've had. So I guess I'm going to have to start writing down some of the numbers of the bikes. I mean, I honestly forget half the geometry numbers. It's been so long since I've built some of these bikes. So
what are you taking?
I'm taking a road bike, personal road bike, and my mountain bike. And I just finished a gravel bike for a friend down the road from here. So I'll take that one as well. A little bit of everything, I guess.
I think it's going to be interesting for you if you've never done a show like that. I hope you have a good pair of shoes. You're going to be on your feet from 2 to 10, right?
I have heard, yeah.
Yeah, well, trade shows are very interesting because you can either be overwhelmed or you can be underwhelmed. But there's not much in between. Not much in between. Take something to drink, too. Although they usually serve beer at this one. You know, so you can just like mosey on over to the beer table and they'll get you some beer.
I think I'm like one booth away from the beer table. So
okay, that could be dangerous. You know, that could be dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. If I start rambling on, yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So what do you do when you're not building frames or flying a plane?
There's not much time. I'm trying to fit riding in for myself. I go stir crazy if I don't ride myself, and that seems to be the hardest thing to do these days. Beyond that, in the area, there's a lot of good climbing around, so we try to get the kids out doing that. My wife and I do a lot of climbing, or at least we used to, I should say, past 10.
Wow.
But we try, for sure.
Well, that sounds like fun. How's the weather up there right now? We're at the mid-September. It just turned warm here again here after being cold. We're in Northeast Ohio. It's probably similar.
Yeah, I would say it's a pretty hot, humid day actually right now.
Yeah, yeah, that's where we are.
We'll be good. We'll be riding right through December for sure. And we'll just switch to fat bikes in January probably.
Tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and your bikes. Tell them what your website is and how to contact you.
Right. Website, it's fluentframeworks.com, I'm pretty sure. I'm on Instagram. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Not always up to date, of course. Instagram is the best way to stay up to date to see what I'm doing. I do have a Facebook page. Yeah, you can reach out to me. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get your message. Yeah, there's email. There's everything. I'm out there. You can find me. Or you can come see me at the show. How about that?
There you go. If you're in the Boston or Northeast area over this next weekend, it's September 22nd again. Matt, what do you have a booth number? You know, it's not that big a show, but do you have a booth number? Do you know what it is?
I can't remember.
Yeah, okay, fine. It's
fluent.
It's fluent. Yeah, it's near the beer tent, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I always ask my guests three questions. What's your favorite food?
Hands down, it's pasta. Love it.
Okay.
I've been hooked as a kid. Love it, yeah.
And what kind of music do you listen to?
I would say a lot of indie rock, garage rock, that kind of stuff. It's kind of all over the place, honestly. Whatever gets me in a creative space, it helps what I'm building or painting.
And do you have any pets?
Sure do. Got a golden retriever / crossed, I should say, with Arctic Wolf. She's 6 years old. Her name's Kuma. She's a sweetheart.
Wow. Wait, she's a golden retriever Arctic Wolf blend?
Yeah, she's got a quarter Arctic Wolf, so she's kind of tall. She's white.
Wow, she sounds beautiful. She sounds beautiful.
Yeah, we got her out at Vancouver Island. We used to live there.
Ah,
like 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, I'm sorry I won't be at the New England Builders Ball to meet you. I hope you have a lot of good luck at the show. You might come home with a lot more than you bargained for. But thanks so much for talking with me. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for reaching out. It's been a pleasure.
All righty. You take care.
All right. Take care. See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Matt Manuel joined me from his home in Halifax, Nova Scotia. You can see Matt and his frames or even have a beard with him at the New England Builders Ball next Saturday night. Or, if you're interested and you're not going to Boston, you can visit his website, fluentframeworks.com. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, it's off to Provence, France, to speak with Dylan Reynolds at Ride and Seek Bike Tours. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
We are back. I'm Diane Jenks, and you are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Bike touring is really popular right now, and sometimes it's difficult to figure out not only where you want to go, but more importantly, who you want to guide your adventure. This evening, I present you with a possible choice, Ride and Seek Bike Tours. Dylan Reynolds started bike touring with his family as a youngster, and now his company takes people all over the world. We talk about his new epic Iron Curtain tour, along with some of the other highlights of his company. Here's my conversation with Dylan. Hi, Dylan. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And you are currently in Provence?
That is correct. Yeah, I'm our base now is in Provence, so I'm presently in the home office.
Nice, nice. So the company is Ride and Seek Adventures. It's a beautiful website, by the way. It's just gorgeous.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time on it in the last couple of days. So tell us a little bit about you and your background and how you got into the business of bicycle touring.
It was kind of ingrained in me by my dad, I think. I was originally from Cambridge in the UK, which, as you probably are aware, is a great bike city. And we used to go off on family holidays. He used to take the whole family on trips. We did Land's End to John O'Groats. We rode across France a number of times as a family. So yeah, my love of cycling was kind of came from my dad and those trips. And then about 20 years ago now, I stumbled across bike guiding as a job, I guess. And from there, I guided for a number of years. And then about 10 years ago, set up Ride and Seek.
You are offering some very interesting tours. And the one I want to discuss today, and I don't even remember how it came across my feed, you know, I get lots and lots of PR stuff, is called the Iron Curtain Berlin to Budapest Tour. It sounds really interesting. It isn't happening until 2019, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we've actually got one of our lead guides, Ben, who's in Germany at the moment doing the final scout for the tour.
So tell us a little bit about it. How many days and nights it's going to be, what kinds of, where you're going to be going and distances and that kind of thing.
Okay. Distance-wise, it sits with most of, well, pretty much all of our other epic adventures, which be an average distance of about 80 to 100 kilometers a day, sort of 60 miles a day maximum. It's split into two parts, two stages. So for those that want to do the whole thing from Berlin to Budapest, it would be 18 days. But you could also do Berlin to Prague, the first stage, which would be 8 days, or Prague to Budapest, which would be 11 days. And we typically find that with the groups we have, half of the group will choose to do the whole thing, and then others will come and go and do single stages. So it works quite well in terms of the dynamic.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. So you don't have to book the entire tour. How many people are usually on your tours like this? Now you grade them. How do you decide which tours are which?
We've got the distinctions we have in terms of the kinds of tours: epic, local, and unique. Unique is kind of a catch-all heading for tours that don't fit into the other two.
Right.
Our grading's actually based on espressos, espresso coffees.
That works for me.
It's kind of synonymous with cycling, really. With the idea that the more espresso cups, the harder the tour. We kind of work off the premise that you need more coffee, the harder the tour is. So so the epics, of which the Iron Curtain is one, and they all have a historical feature or context, are generally around the 3 or 4 espresso mark. The Iron Curtain will come in at 3 espresso cups because whilst we'll always offer extra loops for the super keen riders, we're not crossing any big mountain chains with this tour. So topographically, it's less challenging than some of the other epic adventures we run.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Dylan Reynolds. He is the founder, I guess, of Ride and Seek Tours. They're based in Provence. Where would you say most of your clients come from? Do they come from the States? Do they come from Europe? Or do they come from just all over the world?
That's a really interesting question. We started the business out of Sydney, Australia, and we still have our kind of home office as such, or our head office from an administration perspective is over there. And I guess in the first few years, our marketing was very much focused on Australia. So probably for the first 4 or 5 years, we were top heavy with Australian riders. In the last 2 or 3 years, though, we've been getting some great, PR in the States. And we're now at a point where we probably have as many Australians as Americans. I'd say 40%, 40%. And then the other 20% of riders are sort of made up of cyclists from all over the world.
Let's go back to the Iron Curtain Tour for a second, because it sort of shows us what your company does. Your tour guides are well-versed in a lot of different ways. So you get immersed in the culture, from what I can take it. So what are we going to see in the Iron Curtain Tour, for example, that other tours might go to Berlin or might go to Budapest or might go to Prague? What would you maybe do that would be different?
Well, we really like providing this historical context. And in terms of setting this tour up, that's giving people a sense of place is key to what we do with the tours. Now, that does work on a gastronomic, cultural, historical level. But in terms of, I guess, the niche of these kind of this particular tour, it's a journey which gives a sense of, well, what is really contemporary history? I mean, most of the riders we'll have on this tour will still remember what the Iron Curtain was like in reality.
Right.
And with a mix of the guides providing historical presentations, we also bring in experts to provide that context, I guess. I was talking to Ben, who's scouting this at the moment, and for example, he's discovered a disused runway just outside Berlin, which was used during the Iron Curtain, during the Cold War. And our warm-up ride takes in that... that we've got permission to go on to this runway. It's that sort of stuff. It's really trying to find that road less traveled, but provide that context. And I think that provides a lot of the interest, really.
So how is the Iron Curtain tour being sort of accepted? Are people beginning to look at it and ask questions about it and booking it?
Yeah, we're very lucky in that we have a very high repeat booking rate. So when we launch a new tour, for example, which this is our new epic for 2019, we'll always get a core of past riders jump on board. So numbers wise, we max at 24 for the Epic Adventures. We go 14 for the local adventures, so that's a different kind of premise. But the Epic Adventures, we're generally looking at numbers between 16 and 24. And I think we already have 14 confirmed bookings for this tour. So,
wow.
So it's looking good.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. I would say so. It looks like it'll probably fill up. So what kinds of accommodations do you normally use for your tours?
That's a good question.
Well, thank you.
And I guess it's also one of the elements which we focus on, really. I think we're with the Epic Adventures and long distance tours with a touch of luxury, for want of a better term. We look for best available accommodation in the places we travel to, but also try and focus in on places that have got character and give a real sense of where you are. So accommodation wise, best available is our initial sort of focus, but you'll find that we'll stay in anywhere that family run establishments where we'll build a relationship with them as well. So that's kind of our raison d'être, our focus with the hotels.
When I'm looking at your different tours and you're offering, I think, 6 epic, 3 local, and 4 unique, what would you say your most popular tours are if you were to rate your top 3, the ones that always fill up?
There's a question. The longest running and our first tour was Hannibal, which is presently running, always runs in September. And we're on the 7th edition of that one. And that's Barcelona to Rome. Over the Alps, I mean, that's just... for me, that ticks all the boxes in terms of amazing cycling. Every stop is different because Europe's just so, as we'll find with the Iron Curtain, you don't have to travel far to just find culturally a totally different place. The languages change, the food changes. For me, Hannibal, in terms of the numbers that have done it, has been our most popular tour. I guess because it was our original tour, is probably the one that I've got the biggest soft spot for. The one which seems to be, I guess, most popular at the moment, which we've run twice now, is the Three Islands Tour. So that's Corsica, Sardinia, and Sicily over 3 weeks.
Mm.
And that one, again, I think the diversity of those three islands just makes that tour. So you can choose to do 1 week, 2 weeks, or the whole thing. And it really is a journey. And that sense of Mediterranean hospitality is just, permeates the whole tour. I think,
and great food, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd probably say of all the tours we run, Sicily gets my vote for the best foodie destination.
Are you planning some new tours besides your new Berlin to Budapest Iron Curtain tours? Do you have some other ideas that you're beginning to sort of chew on?
We've got another one planned for next September, which is the White Roads of Tuscany, the Strade Bianche. So that's looking at gravel bikes or road bikes with wider profile tires, with the idea that cycling on those white gravel roads down in Tuscany really does get you off the beaten track. So that's a tour we're definitely running next September. That'll be a 10-day tour. We'll have that under unique experiences.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I think the dream, to be honest, Diane, would be Marco Polo. which would be Venice to Beijing. But yeah, we need the world to calm down a little bit so we can fly through the Middle East.
That would be nice. Yes, that would be so true. So true. So if we were to characterize Ride and Seek tours, who would be interested in your tours as opposed to somebody else's?
Good question. I think the epic adventures is definitely a niche that we have proudly developed as something original, really. The niche of running long-distance bike tours, multi-day journey tours with a touch of luxury, with a historical context, is something which has, fortunately, caught the imagination. And we've been very lucky in terms of getting some awards for that. And I think there is, for example, Diane, there's any number of Americans that would have ridden across America on the various different Ride Across America itineraries. And we run a Napoleon tour, which is Paris to St. Petersburg over 37 days. And I think those riders that really are up for a challenge like the idea of using the bike as a means of adventure and exploring on a journey. I think that's our niche, really. And then we do the other stuff besides the local adventures and the unique. Just in many cases, it's people that have traveled with us on the epic adventures and then want to come back with a partner who perhaps doesn't ride as much. And that's sort of facilitating them being able to join them on tour. But I think it's the long distance journey, long distance luxury bike adventure sort of notion which sets us apart a little bit. I mean, we've certainly seen the last couple of years a number of the other companies are running these sort of long distance tours, but fortunately, I feel like we've got a bit of traction, and I mean, it's paying dividends. Really, we're doing pretty well. We're filling the tours.
Are people bringing their own bikes, or are you offering bikes for them?
We on the epic adventures. So, if we look at the Iron Curtain, for example, we generally find 50% of the participants will bring their own, and then 50% will rent off us. So we've got a couple of bike options, titanium and carbon, which are in our rental fleet. People are very happy to use those. But at the same time, if you're going to ride your bike for multiple days, I can understand why people bring their own.
There's some beautiful tours on your website, really, and some beautiful photographs. And you've got some great press. You've had some press in some, like the LA Times and Forbes and the New York Times and Outside Magazine. You guys are doing really, really well, it looks like. That's cool. So tell me about the little video, Three Islands Epic Bike Tour. So do you get on that ship? Or is that just a cool looking little boat there?
That would be. It's interesting you should say that because no, we don't get on that ship. I think that was.
You should. Okay. How do you get from island to island?
We do. Not the fancy looking boat that it's picked up on the drone footage. It's a funny one that actually, Diane, because that whole tour is dependent on us getting to Cagliari, the bottom of Sardinia, on Friday evening, because there is one ferry, there's one overnight ferry that takes you across to Sicily at 7:30.
So if you miss it, you're out of luck.
If that ever happens, I think we'll lose money on the tour because we'll end up having to fly everyone over. So there's a small ferry, a shorter ferry from the bottom of Corsica up across to the top of Sardinia.
So you just load the bikes and the people on the ferries and off you go.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the elements of it. We've got very good at the logistics of running these tours. But the logistics are complicated. And I think that's what perhaps puts a lot of other bike tour companies off. It's not as crowded a space as, say, I don't know, a 1 week tour around Provence or Tuscany.
This has been delightful. Tell my listeners how they can find out more about your company and especially this new Iron Curtain tour, which sounds fascinating, especially to some of the older cyclists, the people who listen. A lot of my listeners are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and I think they would find this interesting.
Well, that's the target audience. I think our core demographics, 45 up to 70. In fact, we had a 79-year-old ride the Three Islands in April, which I'm still amazed by. But there's some fit people out there.
Yeah, there are.
A lot older than I am, and they seem to be able to ride their bikes a lot better than I can as well.
They're retired. That's what they do. They're not working for a living anymore, right?
Is that right. What it is?
I don't know.
I'll take that excuse.
Okay.
For anyone that is keen to learn more about the tours, yeah, it's Ride and Seek Bike Tours, www.rideandseek.com. It's all there on the website. My email address is dylan@rideandseek.com, and I'd love to hear from any of your listeners that might want to know more about the tours.
I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today. I know you just came back from a bike ride, and you're probably getting ready to do. Yeah, what are you doing next? What's up for you?
I'm heading off to Alba in Piedmont to join the second stage of our Hannibal tour. So the first stage from Barcelona to Alba finishes on Sunday night, and then I'll be helping out the guides in the first few days, and they're riding down to Rome from Alba. So I'm on the road for the next couple of weeks, and then crikey, we're off to Japan. We're running a tour in Japan in October, so that's exciting as well.
Sounds exciting. Well, I'm glad I caught you when I did at home in Provence. Thanks so much for talking with me today. Dylan Reynolds, Ride and Seek Bike Tours. Look them up. They're really interesting. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Diane. Thanks for your time.
All right. You take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dylan Reynolds joined me from the offices of Ride and Seek Bike Tours in Provence. If you're interested in the Iron Curtain Tour or any of his other unique, epic, or local offerings, you can find out all about them at rideandseek.com. So let's take another short break, and then we'll hoof it up to Vermont to catch up with David Kane from the Wax Wing Bag Company. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
Are back on The Outspoken Cyclist, and I'm your host, Diane Jenks. I love the name that my next guest came up with for his company, Waxwing Bag Company. David Kane talks about how he came up with the name, his process for making his bags, and what he's going to be showing off at the New England Builders Ball next weekend. Here's our conversation. Hello, David. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Hi, Diane. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You build some very pretty bicycle bags, and I know you're going to be at the New England Builders Ball. We will not be there this year, I am sorry to say. We really enjoyed it last year. But I like the look of your product, and I want to know how you decided to build bike bags and a little bit about you.
Right. Well, thanks. Let's see. I've been kind of making stuff since I can remember. When I was a kid, I was finding scraps of wood and putting them together and making chairs and whatever. So it's just kind of in me. And I was an art major in college, and creative output has just been kind of my deal. And so is biking. The bags is kind of where those two merge. Back in 2006 or 2007, there was a Rivendell bag that I wanted, and they had stopped making. And dang, I really wanted that thing. And I thought, well, I'll try making one myself, and did. And it was a respectable effort, and I used that bag for a long time and actually still have it. But what I noticed was how much I enjoyed the process of making that bag. And it kind of a light went off. I was like, I want to do this. And I didn't really know what that meant or how that would kind of unfold. But I've had some other things that have kind of gotten in the way in the last, over the years since then, but more or less since that point, I've been getting more and more serious about my bag making efforts.
Well, they remind me of a lot of the Rand and Ehring bags from people like Brooks and Bertaud, and now, of course, Rivendell. They are very pretty. The name of your company, which is interesting, is Waxwing. Tell me a little bit about the genesis of that name. I can think of a bird, right? A waxwing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I knew I wanted to be doing this bag thing, and so I've been doing it. The hardest part has been figuring out a name, and I registered a bunch of domain names, like, this is it, I'm going to stick with it. And then it just, it was sort of the straight face test. Could I say this name with a straight face and stick with it? And none of them passed that test. But my wife Nancy and I went on a cycling trip a few years ago in Australia, which was fantastic. And we were visiting an old friend of hers walking on the beach, and we're just strolling around. And oh, that's the thing I want to mention is my wife, Nancy, is a serious birder. And so is the friend that we were visiting. So we're walking around, we're talking. I think I was talking about the bag thing. And somehow Waxwing came to mind. And I was like, that's it, Waxwing Bag Co. There's the bird aspect, which touches on Nancy's interest in birds. And then there's the wax aspect, which, you know, some of the bags I make are wax cotton, some aren't. But it's a nice tie between the two. And it's just friendly. You know, it's just, it's a nice vibe. And I could say it with a straight face.
It's pretty.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I like pretty.
Yeah.
I'm a girl, right?
Right.
Are you a one-man shop?
Yes, it's just me.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
But which is fun.
Is this a full-time gig?
No, it's kind of about a half-time thing for me. I also do woodworking and build furniture and cabinetry, and I do that for somebody else. When I clock out there, I'm back here, and I'm working on bags. So about 2 days a week, I'm doing bags. And it's kind of tough. Like, I look forward to the time when I can dedicate more time to it because it's, you know, the continuity of working for 2 days and then I stop and then I have to pick up where I was last week. There'll be a breaking point at some point where demand justifies me doing this the whole time.
Sure.
So I look forward to that.
Where'd you go to art school?
Let's see. I went to UMass.
Okay.
In the art department there.
Did you specialize in textiles or?
No, you know, that's an interesting thing. Like I did painting, I did ceramics, a bunch of different things. The whole sewing aspect of it, like the way I think of the bag making is almost like, reminds me of woodworking with flexible material, like the same aspects of accuracy and measuring and cutting and joining. It's very similar to me, but it's a lot less noisy. There's no dust. I can do it in the comfort of my home. So there's a lot of parallels there.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with David Kane. He is the proprietor of Wax Wing Bag Company. He will be another of the exhibitors at the New England Builders Ball next Saturday from 2 to 10 at the Design and Innovation. I never remember if it's Innovation and Design Center or Design and Innovation Center. Anyway, it's in Boston. We were there last year. We won't be there this year. That's why I'm talking to all these people so I can figure out what they're going to do. I take it that all of your bags are made to order. You don't just stock a bunch of bags?
Right. I mean, that's something I thought about. Like, I think if I were to do this full time, I'd probably start producing sort of a standard set of bags that would just be, you know, there wouldn't be any variability in those, so that I just have those ready to go. And that would be my sort of bread and butter, and then I would do custom bags, you know, when people are requesting them. But at this point, everything is pretty much to order. And that's kind of how I see it. Like, somebody gets a bike made, and it's, you know, it's got a certain color or aesthetic or a vibe or a look to it. And ideally, if things work well between us, you know, their bags complement their bike.
Sure.
So I sort of see it as an extension to that process.
Yeah, that makes sense. Tell me about your materials.
Yeah, let's see. Being here in Vermont, it's not like I'm in some city where I can like go to like lots of different stores and find out about different fabrics. Like, you know, early on it was a struggle to kind of figure out where to get things and what's the appropriate material and all that. But eventually, over time I've figured that stuff out. So most of what I do is fairly heavyweight canvas. It has a lot of structure to it. So when the bag is done, it stands there and it's not all floppy and it's got its own structure. So there's treated canvas, which is has a water repellent treatment to it. You know, it doesn't look as though it would be waterproof, but it pretty much is. But then I also make bags out of wax cotton, which people may be familiar with. It has a really beautiful look to it, kind of a rugged, kind of worn quality that kind of improves over age. Over time. And just recently, I got a supply of X-Pack material, which comes out of the sailing industry. It was originally a sail material. And they make something called X10, which is a canvas with a polyester backing on it. So you look on one side and it looks like canvas, just like cotton. And you flip it over and it's this shiny synthetic material.
Hmm.
And you can see sort of it's called X-Pack. And if you look at the material itself, it's got this X pattern of a weave in it. And it's pretty attractive. It's people are into it for bags because it's so lightweight and tough and waterproof. You kind of everything you want. And it's got a really nice aesthetic. So I'm actually working on a set of panniers right now that I'm going to have at the ball to show. It's the first expat project I've done, but I'm quickly thinking this is a great material to be working with.
How does it sew up?
Really nicely. I mean, it's a little bit on the one side. It looks, you know, canvassy. On the other side, it's right. Very plasticky. So it's a little like unlike just fabric where, you know, the needle goes through and it kind of all whatever. Once you go through this, you go through it like poking a plastic bag or something. No second tries with this.
Yeah, right. So don't screw it up the first time. Yeah, I understand about that. One of the cool things about your bags that I see is you actually have more colors. When you think about some of the older fashion bags that yours are fashioned after, in some ways, it's a little more modern because you offer so many really pretty colors. So
yeah.
How is that? How does that work?
You know, I think it's just me. So I remember last year thinking, okay, next year is going to be about standardizing and color. And I just wanted to break out of like, okay, black and blue and some sort of standard colors that people generally want. Like I want to throw more color into it. So it's just fun. And, you know, if you're going to get a custom bag and that appeals to you, why not? There are two bags. They come, I think, in black and blue.
Right.
Those are beautiful. But, boy, if you can get a orange bag or a, I don't know, yellow bag or whatever you want, I just think it's fun.
Yeah, and people can order a swatch book from you, too. So that's kind of cool, too.
Yep, definitely.
So I wanted to ask you about orders. Are you seeing – now, I don't know how your customers get to you. Obviously, the internet has made that a much easier process. But are you seeing any orders that you think might be heading for PBP because that's coming up in 2019? Are you seeing any increase for randonneuring bags?
You know, most of what I do, I mean, probably my bread and butter is really like, you know, handlebar bag, randonneuring style bar bag.
Ah, okay.
So it's possible, but nobody specifically said that they're... they're doing it. It would be, for me, a total honor to make a bag that is going to be used in PBP.
Yeah, no kidding.
So exciting. I would feel really psyched about that. But no, nothing specifically that I'm aware of.
You know, you say that, and that's really an interesting thing. I know the last PBP, my husband built 5 bikes that were there. And that was like, wow. It was really, really neat. So who is your customer? How do they find you?
You know, just on your last note there, for me, it's been fun because I go to D2R2 every year.
Yes.
The first year, there was maybe one bag, and then the next year, 2, and then the next year, 6. And it's like, oh, wow, this is fun.
Right. It's like seeing your children growing up.
That's exactly it.
Right.
That's exactly it. And that's the funny thing about this, too, is that, you know, I send these bags off into the ether, and I may never hear from the person again, or maybe they're a friend, and I'll see them, but... oftentimes, I don't know how it works out. And so then to actually see some of the bags at D2R2, it's like, oh, yeah, I get to see it on the bike and see if everything that we planned worked out. So that can be really satisfying.
Yeah, you need to fly to Paris next time and just what?
That's right.
And see if your bags are in Paris.
Yeah, right.
Are you going to be showing anything new at the Builder's Ball besides the panniers? Do you have some other stuff that maybe we're not seeing on the site? Because your site has a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, what I tend to do is right around the Builder's Ball in the fall, whatever projects I'm working on, I just tend to ask the customers if they mind if I hang on to them for a little bit.
Sure.
And show them. So not necessarily anything that different. I like to just show kind of a broad spectrum of what I do. So the panniers, some handlebar bags, some saddle bags, just kind of a mix of stuff.
What's your best-selling product?
Well, you know, that's funny. I was going to say, and also the reflectors.
Huh.
I've been making these little triangular reflectors that fit into the saddle loops of a Brooks saddle.
Right.
Yeah, they're really fun, and it kind of touches on that color thing. Like, again, they're all custom, so if you come to me and you've got a blue and yellow bike, you know, I can make you a little reflector that matches your bike. Those have been really popular, so I'm just popping a couple of those out every week. So I have a bunch of those. Aside from the reflectors, probably handlebar bags are like what I do the most of.
Nice. So when you make a set of panniers, what are you doing to attach them to the bike? And same thing with the handlebar. How are you attaching your handlebar bags to the handlebars and the panniers to your rack?
You know, with the handlebar bags, it's there's all different brands of racks.
I know, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's really kind of a custom process each time. I mean, if you tell me that you've got a Velo Orange Pass Hunter rack or whatever, I know what that is and I can plan for that. But a lot of times I have customers sending me a sketch with measurements and I'll do Velcro straps on the base of the bag to attach it, or we plan for the height of the decaler. And, you know, it's really kind of a custom process each time, although most bags fall into a very similar range. So it's not that challenging. And I'd say it's similar with panniers. It's a fairly standard kind of hook and bungee kind of arrangement, unless somebody wants something different. But I'd say 90% of the time, that's what I do.
Yeah.
The spacing is all kind of standard, so it's not too hard.
People order sets, like, so they're going to want a matching handlebar bag and matching panniers?
Some people do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. I would think so. How about lowriders? Do you do front bags, too?
Oh, yeah. Actually, when I think of panniers, in my mind at least, I'm thinking of front bags.
Oh, interesting. General. Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's just kind of what I've been drawn to in the last few years and what customers have gone for. I've done rear ones with, you know, sort of a wedge shape cut into it so their heel doesn't hit. But I tend to do low-riding front bags, but I can do whatever.
If I wanted a set of panniers and I said, okay, David, build me a set of bags, and I gave you the go, how long would it take for you to build them? What's your lead time right now?
Don't ask.
Okay. I'm sorry I already asked, so I can't, you know, I can take it back if you want.
No. It's that's the hardest question for me. Yeah, it's hard for me to say. I work as hard as I can, and I crank them out. Sometimes they go quicker, and sometimes they go slower. What I used to do was do everything in, like, a linear fashion. Everybody that came to me, I built the bag in order. But now if there's, like, two handlebar bags, I'll do those together. And then, like, I've got a little time here, I'll do this bag. And I just try to make it work as sort of fluidly as possible to just keep the bags moving out. And as I get better and I get more efficient at it, they're going out faster. So, you know, I say, I don't know, 4 to 8 weeks, I think, is a fair...
That's not unreasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to be taking orders at the show?
Definitely.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Will you have product to sell also at the show?
Yep, a few things. Yep, the panniers, and hopefully I'll have a front bag that goes with these panniers. So it'll be a set, you know, it'll be like a right. set that goes on the front lowrider racks and then a handlebar bag. So it's just a matter of how much I can get done before the
right.
before the builder fall.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Everybody's like really struggling to get it all done now. I'm here. I'm talking to people and they're going, no, I'm spending all next week painting. Or, nope, I'm spending all next week doing this. Nope, I can't talk to you. You know, it's really funny. Because, of course, we only had 51 weeks to work on it, right?
That's so right.
I mean, what the heck? That's just the way it is.
In February, I have these dreams of like this amazing display I'm going to do. And it's going to be beautiful. And I'll make a bag a week leading up to it. And it'll be so nice. And then, you know, sometime in August, I'm like, oh boy, I better get busy.
Right, because it's 3 weeks away, right? 4 weeks away. That's
exactly.
hilarious. So is there anything that you've got that you think is more unique than other bags that are out there right now? Now, I know a lot of people buy Ortlieb, and the big reason they buy them, of course, is that they're quote-unquote weatherproof, or Arkell, and Arkell does some nice things. But what do you think makes your bag more unique, perhaps, than the others?
I guess, I mean, from the first contact with me, you know, it's a one-on-one, like, you know, if you were my customer, it's just you and I going back and forth, and what you get is something that's completely dialed in for your bike that hopefully meets all your aesthetic and functional, you know, goals, which isn't to say getting an Arkell or Ortlieb bag wouldn't do that, but I guess it's the customness of it, you know, that everything can be adjusted, color, size, attachment points, all of that.
Yeah, that does make sense.
I think it's that.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Ella, no bark. My dog is barking, and she always seems to know when to bark just to interrupt something. No, go lay down. I always ask, you know, my guests three questions. What's your favorite food?
Oh, okay. Oof. We went to Japan last fall.
Ooh, lucky you. Wow, you're all over the place. Australia, Japan. Lucky you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, absolutely. That was a dream trip, and we were cycling as well. Boy, the food there, I would just go back. So, I mean, it's not any one food, but the food in Japan was amazing.
Okay. And what about music? What do you listen to?
Punky, folk punk.
Folk punk. There's a genre I hadn't quite wrapped my head around yet. And then, do you have any pets?
Oh, you know, that's a sad story. We had
two
cats.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah. They both died in the last year, so.
Aw. So it's time for, when your hearts are healed, you know, it's time to bring new animals in. You know what people are doing right now? They're lining up at the shelters in South Carolina and on the coast and taking animals out so that they are safe when the hurricane hits. I thought that was a really cool idea.
Yeah, wow. I thought of that. Interesting.
Well, I hope you have a lot of fun at the Builders Ball. Is this your first Builders Ball? Did I see you last year? Were you there?
I was there, but I was busy just talking the whole time. So this is the third time I've been there as a presenter.
Right, exhibitor, right.
I went a couple years before that just to check it out.
Such a cool place.
It really is.
Yeah, the Innovation and Design Center. Well, I hope you have a lot of fun this year, too. And I really appreciate you taking time to talk with me today. David Kane, Waxwing Bag Company. So it's waxwingbagco.com. You can see all kinds of stuff on there. And maybe you'll find something you want. Thanks so much.
Yeah, well, thank you, Diana. It was a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Maybe I'll see you at the Builders Ball next year.
Okay, that sounds great.
Take care.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
David Kane joined me from his home in Vermont. If you're interested, you can log on to waxwingbagco.com. If you're at the New England Builders Ball, you can stop by his booth and say hello in person if you like. My thanks to David, to Dylan Reynolds from Ride and Seek Bike Tours, and Matt Manuel from Fluent Frameworks, all for joining me on the show this week. Next week, we speak with Vittoria Busey. She just broke the UCI World Hour record. Yep, you can go look it up. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook and join or start a conversation. Send us a tweet at Outspoken without an E. And contact me through the OutspokenCyclist.com website at any time. If you don't already, you can also subscribe to our podcast at any of your favorite podcast apps. Please consider making a contribution to the show at OutspokenCyclist.com if you like what we do, what we say, and how we say it. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.